Now, All Access with Cardinals manager Ollie Marmol. Sponsored by Window World. Simply the best for less. Siteman Cancer Center. National leaders in cancer. And by Circa Sports. Circa Sports. Sports betting the way it should be. On the voice of the Cardinals, KMOX.
We are so glad you're with us with Chris Ronji, producer Matt Pajeski, and on Tuesdays, Bernie Miklas joins us, and so does the Cardinals manager, Ollie Marmol. You know what's great about this show, one of many things, is you can think and talk about the Cardinals, you can speculate about the Cardinals and what they're going to do. You know what we do? We go straight to the source. The manager of the team is with us on Tuesdays. He is Oliver Marmol. And this goes back to when you were doing the Sunday show, too. We just really appreciate the information that you pass along each and every week. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Doing great. And we're going to follow you with the assistant GM, Rob Cerfolio, where he'll be joining us at about 12:30. Yeah, we're going to get some surf time.
Save all the hard ones for him.
Yeah, we will. We'll grill him.
Is there anything you want us to ask him?
Yeah, tell us about surf.
I'll send you a list here in a minute.
you like surf. I know that. You've been talking highly of him since the beginning.
Yeah, he's done a really nice job, man. It's awesome when you are someone that's in the front office and you understand the ins and outs of downstairs and the coaching. He comes down every day and just spends time in the coach's room, and you're able to kind of shoot him straight, and he'll dish it out. He can take it as well, but there's this back and forth that allows for everyone to let their guard down and really just point to the things that matter in order to get us to where we need to get to. But he does a really nice job of just setting up a process and allowing us to speak into it and being collaborative in how he does that. But when it comes to the new hires down below in the minor leagues, from pitching coordinators to field coordinators, and you go down the list of all the people that we've added in order to get this thing on track, he's done a really nice job of bringing in the right people that are not only smart, but have a real good feel for the game. And finding that combination is important, man. You've seen other organizations just go down the road of getting some super smart dudes, but don't have that true baseball feel. And Heim, Cerf, that entire group has done a really nice job of finding the right combo there. So I've enjoyed my time with Cerf. He's a good dude.
Ollie, Bernie, how are you, sir? Good to see you as always.
I'm doing well.
The Cardinals are in a big cluster of teams that are right around 500, maybe a game or two over, a game or two under.
Yeah.
So you lose three in a row. It's not unusual if you look around baseball. That's happening to a lot of teams. But here's my question for you. When you look at a three-game stretch where it just hasn't been very good on either side of the ball, so to speak, what are your takeaways? Like, is there anything you learned about your club over these last three nights, even though they did not go well at all for you? Did you learn anything that you can take forward?
Yeah, no, that's probably the right way to look at it. And I look at it not so much on a team basis, but individual, because that's what's going to be really important this year, is making sure that guys individually are making the right strides and taking that next step in their career. So, yeah, you take some positives out of it. At the end of the day, yes, three losses. Some of them I absolutely hated in just the way they went down and the way we kind of handed the game over in different situations, or our inability to execute. But at the same time, like, that's going to happen. This won't be the last time we have a three-game stretch like this. So you have to focus on the things that matter. And in a game like yesterday, there's some ugly parts of that game, but there's still some positives, because when you look at, like, what do we need out of Mason Wynn, right? We have a guy that gets on base only via hit, and his main focus is like, man, can I start to control the strike zone better? Can I control the strike zone better in that 3-2 count? Can I, because he's a threat on the bases. He does a really nice job when he gets on base, going first to third, scoring from first, scoring from second, all those things that you're going to want. And I loved his reaction after his second walk yesterday, because he looks into the dugout, and there's this moment where he looks at the hitting coach, he looks at the players, and he's like, hell yeah, here we go, you know? And then he takes the third one, and it was even better. So there's little moments like that where those are the things. You look at JJ and how they're pitching him now compared to at the beginning of the year, and the adjustments he's starting to have to make, and he hits that hard line drive to center field. Those are those little moments where you start to piece, JJ's starting to do that, Mason's starting to draw some walks and get that on base higher. Those are those little things that you're going to need for all these pieces to come together over time. So, yeah, is it an ideal stretch of three games? No, but at the end of the day, we have to continue to focus on and teach those little moments that when you put them all together, it's what's going to get us closer to where we need to get to. So not only myself, but our staff has done a really nice job of focusing on those. And also on the things we didn't do well. Like that's why in the post game yesterday, Jeff Jones asked to speak to the things that wasn't the style of play that we're used to seeing. And I wanted to make sure we were on the same page as far as what those were. And I asked, can you name them specifically? Is that I want to speak to those. And he named two or three, and those weren't at the top of my list compared to some of the other ones that in our head, like for the coaches, were more egregious. So those are those things where, yeah, Church forgets the outs. You don't got to tell Church when he comes in the dugout, like players will take care of that. You don't need to double down on that. He knows he messed up. Fernandez, game speeds up. He throws it up the line. But there's other moments in that game, whether mentally more than physically, where way more egregious than those two that I just named, that you hone in on today and you make sure that we understand the ins and outs of and make sure that we don't repeat. So those are the things I'm more focused on.
So when you have, and I'm sorry, Bernie, I wanted to the guy who's gotten so much attention, and I'm happy that he's getting the attention because he has certainly deserved it. We're almost 3 weeks into a season. So with Jordan Walker producing the way he's producing right now, what is your, how do you handle that? Is it the kind of thing where you just kind of let him be? And how much encouragement do you take from it versus, you know, being measured about it? Like, this is a great start, but it's only 3 weeks. Let's see where we are in a month sort of thing. How do you see it?
I love the way you just positioned that, because you don't, I don't see it that way. This is not one of those where you're just like, man, just let it be. Because I feel like when you do that, all you're doing is trying to hold on to what's there, right? And seeing how long it'll last. That's the opposite of what needs to take place here. Like, there's already conversations around what this looks like moving forward, because there's going to be a time where they start to nibble and not pitch to him and just go to the guy behind him. And he's already doing a better job of laying off that down and away and just in that 3-2, like just being more determined and convicted about getting the pitch in the zone. And if they punch him out looking, then so be it. But there's already that next step for him of what this looks like. And you can't sit there when you're at the top and just try to hold on to it. I think the most elite guys don't do that. They're looking for what's next, and they're already thinking about that next part in the process of his development. So no, man, he's made some really good adjustments, and that's why post game, when they continue to ask to speak to what Jordan's doing, I continue to point out the work, because that's what matters. Like the work that he's putting in daily. And I wish we could just follow him. Like, I want you guys to see the attention to detail right now with, and it's not only him, man. You look at, I can point to Herrera right now, and I'm sure we'll get to him in a minute. The amount of detail, preparation, and everything that's going into it, it's just a matter of time before it clicks for him and he goes on a run that we start talking about. So you look at Jordan and you look at his video work, and you see him in the video room just writing down all these notes on the starter, the relievers, how they're attacking guys like him, what he thinks is going to happen. And that, like, you go down that list, and then the game starts and he's just free to go play. So that's why I keep pointing towards the preparation and the work, because that's sustainable. That's something you can control. The result, there's going to be stretches where he's not going to do what he's doing right now. And you still have to be able to point and anchor to something that you can control. And that's the work and the preparation that he's putting in right now. So, he's doing a phenomenal job, and I want to make sure that the attention is on what's producing that and not just the result.
Jordan Walker joining a group with Stan Musial, Mark McGwire, Scott Rolen, and Albert Pujols as Cardinals who have had 8 or more home runs in the first 16 games of a season. I mean, that is some company. I wanted to go back to somebody that you mentioned just a few moments ago, and that's J.J. Weatherholt. This is interesting now because Weatherholt, as you said, pitchers are starting to challenge him a little bit. Now, that was a screamer that he hit for a base hit, another two-strike hit for him. I guess a two-part question. Why is he so good with two strikes? And secondly, what is he doing to be challenged here and to kind of work his way through something?
Just understand where his deficiencies are and how pitchers are going to try to go there more often. But the reality is, man, this guy, his adjustability and hitability is kind of, it's impressive. And he's going to close those gaps quicker than most because of his adjustability. So We're already seeing him being able to kind of get a little bit more flat at the top there and not slide underneath that pitch and foul it straight back. And they're going to try to backfoot him with the slider. So there's certain things where he's already starting to understand and take those pitches. And a couple of the lineouts, nothing to show for it, have been more positive in both the directness of the swing, but also the direction, staying hard through the middle. Last guy I'm worried about is him. He's doing a nice job. His mentality, he's the same every day. It doesn't matter what happened the previous day. He comes in and he's the same dude, which is fun to see.
Ollie, one thing I wanted to ask you, I don't need to read you the numbers because you guys have all
Please
the numbers
don't.
You can handle. No, right. But it seems that even though it's early, a big problem has been like your starting pitchers – first time through, they're generally speaking been pretty good. I mean, the first inning's been a little shaky here and there, but generally speaking, solid enough. Second and third time through the lineup, I mean, it's kind of like. And so, what do you make of that? How can you turn something like that around? Is there a key for each individual pitcher to turn it around? Because it really is something that's becoming pretty pronounced.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about it quite a bit, and I think some of the numbers you're going to read off have to do with end zone miss or overall whiff and just our ability or inability to kind of miss bats. And that's what that'll come down to is the more familiar, more times through the order, the more comfortable some of those at-bats get. And you have to try different things in order to combat that. So we talk about that often. I actually had a really long conversation with Dusty about it yesterday, and it's something we're continuing to look at as far as different guys, even like Libby, did a really nice job yesterday. It's a perfect example of establishing his fastball down in the zone, 94, 95, just peppering it. I mean, it looked good first time through. And then guy saw it enough first time through that he didn't have his curveball to the degree that he normally has. And now you can eliminate a pitch and kind of do a little bit more damage against him. So it's pitcher to pitcher. It's not one blanket statement across the board, Bernie. It's just not. But we do know that that's a issue at the moment that we have to figure out something around. And it's not the easiest because you're not going to create whiff. You can switch usage and add a pit and do things that give you a better chance, but creating a guy that doesn't get whiff to actually be average to above average at it is a difficult task. And it's not one that across the league people are doing well. So, yeah, we're aware. Trust me.
Bernie Nicklaus on KMOX is sponsored by Stewart's American Mortgage, home of the Bagel Loan, and by Celica Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer.
We're back on All Access with Ollie Marmol. It's sponsored by Window World, simply the best for less. Simon Cancer Center, national leaders in cancer, and Circa Sports betting the way it should be. With the manager of the Cardinals, Ollie Marmol, I'm Tom Ackerman. Chris Ronji is with us. Let's get back to Bernie Miklas.
Well, I appreciate that. I don't want to go out of turn. You guys are great to me. Thank you. Ollie, I want to circle back because you did touch on something, and it's – in this day and age, it's amazing to actually look at how difficult it has been for your starting pitchers, especially to strike people out and get the swing and miss. And my question, and I'm not trying to pile on, but the numbers are what they are. And what's tough about this, I got to imagine, is, you know, the ball is in play all the time. And then on top of that, you know, your guys would be the first to say they're walking too many people. So you got base runners all the time. You can't just say strike people out, but how do you overcome it, I guess, is the best way to put it. How do you do that?
Bernie, it's difficult. I mean, there's not a good answer to this other than you can't – if you don't have swing and miss stuff, you can't give free passes. And that's one thing. If there's something that's talked about a ton in that clubhouse from the pitching side, is you got to be on the attack from pitch one. Because 1-0 compared to 0-1 and winning the 1-1 count is important, right? So, like, you have to be able to get ahead to let your stuff play in the race to just kind of the race to two strikes. So, yeah, when you look at giving ourselves the best chance, what I will say from outs above average or whatever you want to look at, we're leading the league in defense right now. And that's given us our best shot, right? Like, we know that we pitch to contact, and because of it, we better be really damn good at defense. So that's where the attention to detail and some of the things that we're not pointing to right now, like that's going to give us an opportunity to get out of some of these innings where there is traffic. JJ and Mason and those guys have done a really, really nice job with the middle. Gorman's made some nice plays at third. Urias has done a nice job over there. Burleson's coming into his zone at first. So, like, from a defense standpoint, we lead the league right now in a lot of categories. And we know that that's going to be key with how we pitch to contact. So there is no, are we going to try to improve guys' ability to miss a bat? Always. That's important. But we know that because that's not the case, we better play really good.
I know you mentioned, I know you mentioned earlier talking about games sort of getting away middle innings or later. When do you feel like you've got a pretty good handle on how your bullpen is going to work out? I mean, you know who your late inning people are, but how you're going to utilize the rest of it. Do you still feel like you're in that feeling out process of trying to know who belongs where?
Yes and no. I mean, those guys, as the season goes on, start to define that for you. But we feel really good about Riley at the end and JoJo and Stanek based on righty lefty lane, getting you the seventh and eighth. And then there's a little bit of a carousel there to get you to those guys. Soriano, I'll tell you what, man, that small transaction of the Granillo Soriano, that's a really nice one because he has shown well. His stuff is playing well, and he's going to get an opportunity to kind of bridge that gap. But Swanson's not who we saw last year, and he's working on that. And that's the life of a reliever, man. There's times where it's going to go really well for you and times where it's not. And he's in that kind of spot right now where it's not. Our job is to get him back on track, but he's someone that could bridge you to that back end. And then Brule is that kind of middle innings lefty that can take his lane when needed. So I feel like it's already starting to define itself. Now it's just a matter of execution and performance.
Interesting question from Zachary on ABS. Some teams are trigger happy, others conservative. The Cardinals seem to be the latter, he says. Can you talk about what the coaching staff is pushing for? There are two things. One, Baseball Savant has you at 8-5 on the year with 13 challenges, 62%. The second thing is that this is all on the hitter. There's no help from the dugout.
No, and man, we've given them the freedom to be aggressive with it if they feel like there's a call that changes their at bat, whether it's flipping the count or ending in at bat in a walker or strikeout. We have the freedom to use it and get more aggressive as the game goes on. But no, this is one that they cannot look in for and get help with. And I saw a couple of the comments in the, as far as questions with the ABS, they have to immediately challenge on their own, and they have the freedom to do it. We're pushing for them to do it. Now it's a matter of understanding the strike zone and feeling convicted about doing it when it comes up.
Do you like the way it's working right now? The way the system is, would you prefer it to stay this way or have all the balls and strikes called
no,
by the system?
I like what we have in place at the moment. I really do. And I like there being two instead of one challenge or three challenges. I think two feels right at the moment. But the speed of it, all of it. And the more I talk to other managers and even the umpires, like, everyone's on board with this process. Like, those guys want the right call being made as well. I like what's currently in place. I really do.
Ollie, very early on, you mentioned Ivan Herrera, so I figured I'd throw that one to you. He's drawn walks, you know, good quality at bats, power's not there yet. What do you see? What does he have to do? How soon will he get to where he has to be?
I wish I had an answer for how soon, but no, this is one where even yesterday he came up to me after his first at bat, and he's like, man, one of those, it was a pitch he fouled off, sinker. He said, that one finally felt like my swing. And that's what you want to hear. Because prior to that, he's very honest. And he'll say, like, man, it still doesn't feel right. So yesterday was the first time he said that one felt closer to my swing. Now I just need to kind of repeat it. So my hope is that we're getting closer and closer. This guy, he's a good hitter. He knows that's what he brings to the table. And he's going to get hot and carry this group sooner than later. But, this is a guy. That's why I pointed to him earlier, man, because you can't sit there and watch him prepare and work and fault him for anything other than when the game starts, man, it's not going his way. Cause he's going about it the way you would want him to go about it, from a video preparation to cage work, to his routine on field work, all of it. And baseball is just being baseball right now to him. So, my hope is that swing he took that he mentioned to me yesterday, he takes a couple more of those today and feels closer and closer, and then just kind of takes off.
In terms of the catching position as a whole, whether it's offensively, defensively, how do you feel about your core there at the moment?
Yeah, I think we have some guys here and some guys coming, and we're really strong in that position, and I love the competition that comes with that at the moment. And I mentioned this last Tuesday when we spoke. Part of April is just making sure that we keep the cadence that we currently have with Herrera. This is something we've planned before spring training to make sure that we keep him headed in the right direction from a health standpoint and everything else, but from a health standpoint for sure in April, to make sure that his lower half is holding up and he's taking the workload the way we hope he would. So I know I see the comments and get quite a bit of the questions on catching him more, but this is part of the plan, and we got to stick to it and make sure that we're being responsible with it.
Just a quick preview, if you would, of tonight with Michael McGreevy on the hill before we go.
Yeah, this is a group that's interesting for him because these guys don't punch and they do not miss on the ground. And this is going to be a really good matchup. When you talked earlier, Bernie, this is the guy that came to mind specifically to this group because his bread and butter is being able to kind of mix enough to get soft contact on the ground when there is traffic, get out of those innings with double plays. This is going to be a test for him, and this is going to be a good one. Because when these guys miss, they miss the way they want to miss, and it's usually in the air. So I'm looking forward to navigating this lineup today and just seeing that first time through, second time through, and just kind of how the little game within a game, each hitter is going to be really important for him today.
Appreciate your time very much. Rob Serfolio, assistant GM, is coming up next. We say thank you to Cardinals manager Ollie Marmol.
Can I stay on and ask him some tough ones?
You want to grill him? Let's go.
No.
You know what? Just send us your list and we'll pretend like there are questions.
Yeah, that's right.
So you don't have to get in trouble.
Yeah, text me.
No.
Text us. I'll fire.
He'll never know.
I'll fire out.
Oh, I believe you.
Have a good one.
You guys have a good one. Appreciate it, boys.
Now back to the Gas House Gang, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling.
And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis and Chesterfield Fence and Deck.
On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Well, it's a pleasure on the Gas House Gang, not only to speak to Ollie Marmol, which we just did for the last half hour, Cardinals manager with us with Chris Ronji and Bernie Miklas. I'm Tom Ackerman, but a real treat to be joined for the second portion of our show by the assistant general manager of the Cardinals, and that would be Rob Serfolio, the former Cleveland Guardian executive, is with us as the Cleveland Guardians make their way into town. They've already taken the first game. Serf, thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. I caught the end of Ollie's interview. I was hoping he's going to stick around for some trash talking like he said he was going.
Yeah, he was going to try to get in there.
Sent us a list of questions for you. You are not going to like these.
Someone in the comments suggested he gets on a burner account and just starts firing away. You know, something like that.
It wouldn't be as fun if it's a burner account. I know that comes straight from the horse's mouth. Let's do it.
That's right. Speaking of that, let's get it from you. Let's hear your thoughts on the season so far. We're going to dive into the minor leagues from you, but I do want to ask you about the big league club. They're 8-8. What are your impressions so far?
Yeah, it's been a little bit of a interesting game by game roller coaster in some ways. I think, you know, to Ollie and his group's credit, they did a ton of work in spring training, just like leaning into the fact that this is a young team. And some of the things that come with that is some ups and downs, and really just trying to instill in the players and the coaching staff, just who do we want to be? How do we want to play? What do we want the opposition to feel from the dugout across the field? And I think we've seen some real positives from those efforts so far this year of like the relentless effort and, you know, guys running hard 90s when we're chasing five runs in the eighth inning, like last night. You're seeing a lot of those things from a mindset and behavior standpoint that we want to be like a fabric of Cardinals baseball for the long run here. Some things that this organization has really prided themselves on for a long time, which is why all these banners are flying around Busch Stadium. So it's been awesome to see that. And I think with that, with a young team comes some peaks and valleys on the performance side. But despite that, the work between 2 and 6 o'clock has been there every day. We're seeing guys that are going through some awesome development efforts show through in games, and then some guys that we're trying to support with some valleys on the side. So there's all parts of that. And I think to the staff's credit, every day they show up looking to work with our guys and get the most out of them, which is awesome.
Surf Bernie Miklas, good to talk to you, man. I want to say that I think we're all fired up about the progress that's been made very quickly through the hard work of you and many others in terms of the player development system. The Cardinals are being praised throughout the industry for the work that's been done. And I wanted to ask you this. I'm trying to phrase it the right way, but how important is it to the future of the Cardinals that because of all the changes that have been made, all the new people that are in, all the upgrades that have been made, how much do your prospects now have their best possible chance to develop to a way where they're happy, you're happy? Is it more favorable that that will happen now compared to perhaps the recent past?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question, Bernie. And there's a lot of layers to that. And as a new guy, I can only speak to what I've seen the last 2 years, right? And, you know, I think you mentioned it's a team effort. That's the first thing that jumps out to me is just really proud of the staff we've been able to put together. And everyone from ownership to Haim, to those very initial conversations of just ensuring that we were all on the same page with what we wanted to do from a resources perspective to put our players in a position to succeed and get better each and every day. And, you know, when I say resources, that's inclusive of people, of information, of tools, all those things. So it's not a perfect math equation. But I think if you get the right people and the right information and right tools all in the same environment, and then you bring in players that have a hunger and desire to get better, good things can happen. At least that's my experience so far in this game as a bad player to now working on this side of it and just trying to have people that show up every day, one, that are excited to be there and work with each other and then use information to our advantage to ensure that everything we're doing with a player to the best of our ability is going to help move them closer to the best version of them and just use evidence to help us along the way to ensure that we make less errors than we get them right. And you're not always going to get them right. Injuries happen. Things happen. Environments and people change. But if we can control those inputs to the best of our ability, I think it gives us a great chance.
Because you're in this period right now where it's, I don't know if I want to call it a transition, but I mean, it is. You've got a lot of new front office. The roster, a lot of it is new. There are guys who've departed. You want to be patient with the roster you have because you're trying to figure out what you have in house so that you can make decisions moving forward. But with some of the younger players, and I think about Weatherholt primarily, how much room do they have to fail? So if it is not going well for a while, do you think, oh gosh, I don't want them to, you know, keep toiling in this position. We got to take them out and do something else. I mean, how are you approaching that? And I guess that's generally speaking for all of these younger players.
It's such a great question, Chris. And, you know, if you guys have some help with that answer, I'd love to hear your thoughts because it's really difficult. And ultimately, in some ways, like you want guys to have battle wounds by the time they get to the major leagues, because, you know, I think one thing that's interesting from my vantage point is just the last 5 or 6 years, Major League Baseball has really condensed the minor leagues and guys are getting to the big leagues faster than they ever have. Some of that's by way of the rules. And so, you know, the number of innings pitched or plate appearances that a minor league player has today is a lot fewer than that of 10 years ago. You know, when I finished playing and when I made the transition over to this side of things, and some of that comes with like players that have not learned how to struggle or how to fail. And so I think that's why the mindset of we are never out on a player. There is always something that we can do better to ensure whether it's the physical traits that we see on field from a performance side of it or the mental side of it and how we're supporting guys away from the field. All of those things have to work in concert. And we have to be okay with if this player is failing, let's ensure that we're not anchoring to short-term outcomes, but that we're really trying to be scientific about like what are the things behind the scenes that are leading to consistent performance that we can measure and we're going to hold ourselves to so that if a guy goes 0 for 20, we can use information beyond just a 0-0 batting average to help us say, is this guy doing the things Is he controlling the zone? Is he swinging? And when he's swinging, is he hitting the ball hard at good, favorable angles? You know, I look at a guy like Yvonne Herrera right now, who's one of the unluckiest hitters in baseball from just a production perspective. He's doing a lot of things really well in terms of consistent contact, limiting chase, and hitting the ball hard. They just are going right at people. And that's sometimes how the sport of baseball goes. And I think that's why we want to always ensure that the things that we're tracking, like, heck yes, we want guys to perform. That's what we're solving for. But what are the indicators of consistent performance? And are our guys doing those things really well to the best of their ability? And ultimately trying to make them controllables for each guy.
So is failing at the big league level, can you see it for a young player as a benefit as opposed to it, you know, getting to them mentally if they're failing here?
I think you can. I think it really depends on each player. And we need to know our players very well so that we can support them when they ultimately do have that transition. But that gap from AAA to the big leagues is maybe the highest it's ever been. And there's a real adaptation that comes with making that transition. And so that's why I think just the alignment between the major league and minor league staff is really critical, so that when these guys come into a new environment, everything they're working on, their routines pregame, their early work, the cues that they're getting in game, like, they're speaking the same language, so that when the player has to adapt to more people in the stands, a new environment, a new stadium, different travel, that the baseball side of it is really controlled and hopefully, like, very consistent for them. So that's something we try and do. But Chris, I think your question is spot on of some failure is good. We just try and support our players to the best of our ability when it inevitably happens, because it's going to happen for young players more times than not.
Rob Serfolio is with us, the assistant GM of the Cardinals on the Gas House Gang. A lot of questions coming in about pitchers. Matt wants to know about Tanner Franklin. We know he's got some game, that's for sure. The Redbird farmhands, you know, they're going to have a lot of questions. Van Dyke, Shiligowski, Young, Cade Crossland, who I hear great things about. I'm keeping an eye on for sure. My question related to all of that, and I guess Bryson Motz is a good example of this, is how do you identify what a pitcher has? Where do you see that upside and look past the numbers? You know, Motz had that high ERA, but you all saw something in there. When you identify a pitcher and then decide we can develop him this way, what how do you do that? What are the methods you use there?
Yeah, I'm smiling, Tom, because this is a fun one, right? And it has so many different flavors. There's so many ways that you can be productive as a pitcher. There's guys that rely on velocity. There's guys that rely on shape and speed differential. And there's guys that rely on creating unique angles out of hand and over the plate. And ultimately, you know, when we're looking at a player in our system or from an acquisition lens, you're trying to figure out what makes this player unique, and just trying to understand those inputs to the math equation. And then you try and build around that. So it is, you know, a little bit of both art and science. And I think one of the interesting things about the pitching space and an advantage for our sport, maybe relative to other sports, just how many things you can quantify now with the spin that comes out of hand, their wrist angle when they release the baseball, and what that might mean for future potential of different shapes and where you want to take their arsenal. There's some guys that release the ball really low to the ground and some guys that release the ball really high. And that creates different looks for hitters. And I think you're just trying to understand all of those things really objectively. And then you need to have a team of smart pitching experts that ultimately can work with both medical and strength and conditioning to say, if we were to do these things with a player, what might happen from a hypothesis standpoint, and what are his strengths today? What are the areas that we need to get better? And do we think we can move the needle on those things? And there are some things that are harder to do than others, but you know, that's been one of the most fun things for me this past 17 months coming over from Cleveland is obviously, you know, having been there for 10 years, I had a pretty good pulse on how we went about it and with the Guardians, and bringing in other smart people from other organizations, inclusive of people that have been here in St. Louis for a long time, is here's the problem set we were looking to solve. Here's how we did it. How'd you guys do that in Seattle versus Baltimore versus Pittsburgh versus the Cardinals? And what's the best of all of those things, and how do we use that moving forward? So, you know, you use an example like Bryson Motz, Tom, of a guy that's, left-handed that creates really unique angles out of hand. And so that means it's harder and easier for him to do certain things with the types of shapes that he can create. And now ultimately, because of that, is how do we put a complete arsenal in his hand so that he can beat both righties and lefties consistently as a major league starter, which you have to do as starters. So those are the types of questions we try and answer, whether it's a Tanner Franklin in the draft or a Bryson Motz, who's a player that, you know, we're working with for the first time for all the new group last year. And we're just trying to understand their strengths and understand what makes them unique. And then what are the things we can do around that to continue to elevate their game?
Rob, I think I'm going to get the last question. Thanks for the honor, Tom Ackerman. Appreciate it. No, I want to bring up one guy, and I want to point this out. I'm making an observation. It is not a criticism whatsoever. But fans are clamoring, and I understand they want to see Jimmy Crooks up here. A lot of power, a lot of excitement. I totally get that. But I also know it seems like the organization is really putting a premium on high contact rates, hitting strikes, not chasing, all that stuff. It is a situation where maybe the reason why Jimmy has not been promoted, you feel it's a disservice to him to bring him up when there's still a lot of swing and miss in his game and there's still some, you know, quite a bit of punch out in his game. You don't want to put him up here to fail, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it's a good question, Bernie. I mean, ultimately, Heim makes the final decision on what we do with the roster, right? So a lot of people provide input on that. And, you know, from my vantage point, the goal is to, whenever that call happens for Jimmy, that we leveraged every second we could in AAA to make sure that he is ready to come up and help the major league team. Not just be a major league player, but be a winning major league player. And there's a difference between those two things. And, you know, I think there's some things that we're really proud of his work, especially defensively. Of, you know, I think sometimes the average fan or just the public like undervalues just how much extra work a great major league catcher has to do on the preparation, the defensive side, the alignment with the pitching staff and the coaches. We've really challenged Jimmy with that. He has been incredibly coachable and really has moved the needle on a lot of those things, so that whenever that phone call comes, like I said, he's ready to step into that major league clubhouse and have success. And then on offense, like, again, you know, it kind of comes back to what does Jimmy do really well? Like, he hits the ball hard, and he hits the ball hard at productive angles. And now to the parts of his game where we can continue to make him more resilient or bulletproof is covering the zone from a contact perspective. And so there's some things that our hitting group's doing with him to ensure that his bat path is just working at the most optimal angles for him to still do what he does best, but also ensure that when he's facing the best pitching on earth, that his bat path and his movements in the batter's box are ready to be able to combat the shapes and velocity that is just really hard to simulate in the minor leagues. You almost can't do it until the guys have the opportunity to learn and adapt in the major leagues. But we can use that information and work backwards and say, what can we do with Jimmy in the short term while he's getting everyday plate appearances and everyday playing time in AAA to be able to ensure that he's as resilient as we possibly can make him when he gets up top.
Really good insight on the organization from assistant GM Rob Serfolio on the Gas House Gang. We really appreciate it. We didn't have time to squeeze in any of Ollie's questions, but I'm sure he'll get another chance.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. I was hoping to get at least one or two of those. I'm sure he had some good ones.
Have a great day. Thank you very much for being with us.
Appreciate it, guys.
Well, because we do our very best to give you uninterrupted coverage of the Cardinals leaders, Ollie Marmol and Rob Serfolio, we are flat out of time. So we just want to let you know that we love you all, that the Gas House Gang will be back on Thursday, and Bernie and Chris will be right back at it. No show tomorrow because I'll have pregame at 11:20. Which is appropriate.
How about that?
Yeah.
Is it on purpose?
It is on purpose. Cardinals and Guardians tomorrow, day game. So we're looking forward to that. For Bernie, for Chris, I'm Tom. Thanks to Matt Pajeski. Thanks to Frank Ladd, our guest, Ollie Marmol, Rob Serfolio. It has been an absolute blast, as always. And your comments are always outstanding and on the money, most of them.
Except for that one guy.
There's one guy who changes his name a lot.
That guy.
But anyway, thanks for joining us on the Gas House Gang.